members are present tonight. With that, I'll turn the time over to Vice Chair Heyer to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yes, thank you, Chair White. We have the pleasure of having some scouts from Troop 11 in Ogden today. And we have Colton Rich, who is the senior patrol leader for that troop. He is going to come and lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you want to bring your troop with you, and if you'll lead us, that would be great. So if we'll just follow his instruction.
Audience, please arise. Hand over heart or scout salute. Please recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Two. Thank you. Please be seated.
Chair White, Colton and his troop have provided us with some questions. They are very prepared. They follow the Boy Scout motto to be prepared. And so we will work on these questions for them unless they want to stay until the end of the meeting and ask them personally. But anyway, they've been very well prepared in coming tonight, working on their merit badges.
Next on our agenda is a moment of silence. Please take a moment of silence with me. Thank you very much. So we have some recognitions tonight, and I am going to read the first one. So this is a joint proclamation of the Ogden City Council and Mayor declaring April 2017 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Ogden City. Whereas sexual assault is a significant public issue that harms our community and leaves a lasting mark on victims and their families. One in three women in Utah will experience sexual violence during their lifetime. One in eight women and one in 50 men will be raped. However, more than 88% of rapes are not reported to law enforcement. Rapes in Ogden and surrounding communities are equal to or higher than those reported statewide. In 2015, 116 rapes were reported to the Ogden Police Department. And whereas data revealed in 2011 indicates that the cost of sexual assault in the state totaled nearly $5 billion. Utah spends more than $92 million on those who have perpetrated sexual violence. Only $16.5 million is spent on victims. The greatest cost is the pain, suffering, and diminished quality of life that victims experience. And whereas people in Ogden and throughout the state are taking a stand against this atrocious crime. Since 1996, the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Assault has strived to establish programs for victims and work toward creating a society free from sexual violence. And whereas the Weber State University's Women's Center is hosting Take Back the Night Rally, March and Survivors Speak Out on April 14th as part of the Safe at Weber Violence Prevention and Advocacy Services. This program is designed to protect WSU students against different forms of violence and strives to create a future where all relationships are healthy and built upon a foundation of respect. And whereas the YCC Family Crisis Center has an array of programs to support sexual assault victims, Ogden residents take action with the YCC's Walk Against Sexual Assault. Several other Ogden area resources exist to assist victims, including the Sexual Assault Crisis Line, Intermountain Specialized Abuse Treatment Center, New Horizons, Weber County Attorney's Office Victims Assistance Program, Vine, Utah Legal Services, Rape and Sexual Assault, and YWCA. And whereas we aim to foster a society where sexual violence is no longer tolerated, and we encourage individuals, families, and businesses to take action to prevent this horrendous crime and support victims. Now, therefore, the Ogden City Council and Mayor Michael P. Caldwell do hereby proclaim April 2017 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Ogden City. We encourage residents to join us as advocates for victims of sexual assault and to put an end to this horrific crime. We are grateful for the incredible efforts of the organizations and individuals who work tirelessly to cultivate a stronger, more caring, and supportive community and to protect our residents and future generations from acts of sexual violence.
Chair White, if I might, make a motion that we declare April 2017 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Ogden City.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chair Heyer and second by Council Member Lopez to adopt this joint proclamation. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes. And anyone else? Yes.
Well, anyone that's an advocate or a survivor in the room, come up here.
We're going to take your picture, so don't be shy.
And I don't know who the other. Brittany, we've got two of them. Weber State, yeah.
You have some Weber State reps here.
Yes.
We're going to kind of all move this way for Brittany.
Keep coming towards this way.
Other end so that you're not. Are we ready? 1, 2, 3.
Say something at the podium.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks for being here. Thanks so much for being here.
Okay.
All
right. And Brittany, we might need another one for the YCC. If we could do that, that would be great. Thank you. Yeah, Turner, please. I mean, I think that.
So my name is Turner Bitten. I am the executive director at the Utah Coalition Against Sexual Assault. I just want to express my sincere gratitude for what has happened tonight. I got an email the other day because we're going all over the state looking for these proclamations, looking for designations and recognition of Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I got asked, what is the value of doing this? You know, you run all over the state, you go to all these different meetings, you pass a resolution or a designation, and hang it on your wall. And it doesn't quite grasp what this type of recognition means. Sexual assault is a very pervasive problem. It's something that is deeply personal to victims and survivors. It's deeply personal to a lot of advocates. Folks across the state have been working for decades to solve this problem. And what we all know as advocates is that reporting, it doesn't occur. As you said, as you were reading the proclamation, 88% of sexual violence and rapes are unreported, which means that there are folks out there in the community that are suffering or that may be looking for community and support or services that have never disclosed that they have been a victim of sexual violence. And seeing their government, even at the closest level, the highest levels, recognizing Sexual Assault Awareness Month is one more chip away at the walls that prevent folks from disclosing. So I just want to thank you for what's happened tonight, and I hope there are others that will speak as well, but thank you. It's a great privilege to live in Ogden. I love Ogden, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Stevenson. I'm the rape recovery coordinator at the YCC, been there about 5 years, and this is our bilingual case manager who works closely with me, Marie Broadhead. And we are just so grateful that as a city you have recognized April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. It gives a voice. It gives a voice to victims. It will encourage them to report and help them feel that they've been heard, that this crime shouldn't continue, that it's not the fault of the victim, but it's the fault of those who choose to rape and abuse people. We have victims, the youngest we've helped and helped their family, 5 years old on up into their 70s. This crime can touch anybody, any family. So I really appreciate what you've done tonight. I honor you for it. I'm a resident of Ogden City. I love it here. I did leave some flyers for our walk against sexual assault on April 22nd on the Ogden Parkway. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Stephanie McClure, and I am the director of the Women's Center at Weber State University. On behalf of Weber State and our Safe at Weber Violence Prevention and Advocacy Program, I would really like to thank the City Council for this proclamation and this honor. At Safe at Weber, our tagline is creating healthy relationships together. We really are focused on community-wide initiatives because we know that this is an issue that cannot be solved by individuals, that we need communities to come together to talk about these issues, acknowledge that these issues are happening throughout our communities, and to work together to improve our skills as well as our ways to combat this sort of violence. So on behalf of Safe at Weber and the Women's Center at Weber State, thank you all very much for this great honor.
I was surprised of the number of men as well. That was very surprising. So thank you. Recognitions are fun. Next on the agenda is Rich. You're going to read the next one.
All right. Thank you, Chair White. I'm going to apologize ahead of time because I'm probably going to make a mess of your name. But the Ogden City Council and Mayor proudly recognize Alice Satsuko Hairai. Am I anywhere close? Okay.
What is it?
Satsuko Hairai. Hairai. Okay. Okay. For providing invaluable contributions to the Ogden community. Alet Satsuko Hairai played an instrumental role in creating a more welcoming and inclusive Ogden through her lifetime of service and invaluable contributions to the Ogden Diversity Initiative. Alice dedicated her time to teaching others about the silenced history of Japanese Americans. She was a witness of Japanese American persecution due to the events of World War II. At the age of 3, Alice and her family were sent to an internment camp at Topaz, Utah, where she spent her childhood. After being released, Alice shared her experiences in elementary schools, universities, and civil groups throughout Utah. Her lessons have taught the importance of love and preventing history from repeating itself. Alice earned a Bachelor's of Science in Nursing from the University of Utah. For 54 years, she served in several nursing positions that fueled her passion for helping others. As a mother of a child with a disability, Alice became a significant force for change in the disabled community. She and her husband, Mac Hairai, I'm so sorry, advocated for and brought to light the challenges the disabled community faced. The couple was recognized with the Exceptional Parents of the Year Award. Alice was a strong, determined, caring, and compassionate individual. We are saddened by her passing and offer sincere condolences to her family, friends, and other close associates. We are beholden to the lessons Alice has taught to the community, and we are confident that her legacy will continue for many years to come. So if you would please come forward now and receive this plaque in her honor.
Thank you.
Take a picture.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Apparently, I don't know, but she was on the diversity initiative.
So I guess I've been asked to just express our thanks as a family. This is my sister Marlene was a big reason why, you know, my parents got involved with the community, and you know, both Alicia and I and Marlene were born here and raised here, so we love Ogden, and so we really appreciate this honor and honoring my mom. She loved this city very much, and so I'd like to thank everybody. And these are her. So this is it's myself, Marlene, and Alicia are her kids, and then her brother is David right here, and her her sister is Irene. She has another brother in Homedale, New Jersey, and I think that as far as being in the camps, it was her and her Uncle Warren that's in New Jersey, and also David, you were born in the camps, right? No, Irene was born. No, you weren't born. Okay, neither. I'm sorry. I got to brush up on my history. So, anyway, and then my wife is Tammy, and my kids are Mackenzie and Alex, and then Alicia's kids are Dylan and Jackson, and her husband Brian is not here. He's in Chicago. So, yeah, but we like thank. Thank all of you for giving us this great honor, and my mom this great honor. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have a kind of an unofficial second wife, and it's my wife's cousin, Cynthia, and she's here also. Sorry.
Next on our agenda is a request to be on the agenda. Every year at this time, we ask our legislators to come and give us an update. And I see Representative, are you flipping a coin to come up? Who's coming up first?
So Jeremy.
All right. Representative Peterson. I was going to go in alphabetical order, but, you know.
I can do this. Okay, well, Madam Chair and City Council, it's good to see you again. It feels like I was just here a year ago doing this, and that's how I know I'm getting older, as time is moving more quickly, and I have a much accelerating receding hairline. So this year, I ran a couple bills that were of interest to the city. One was dealing with inmate housing. We proposed a bill that would reduce the number of halfway house beds in Weber County by a significant amount. The bill was kind of an opening salvo to a discussion on how to do that. There was committee support to pass the bill this session, but the way the bill was written, I'm not sure that it would have passed the Senate, and I'm not sure that it would have been necessarily the best outcome the way the bill had been drafted. And so we're going to take that to the interim and discuss that with the Department of Corrections. The total cost to the taxpayer would have been about $10 million to reorganize how our halfway house system is run. We believe, based on current resources and running some numbers with those who do appropriations for that department, that we can get it done for about $5 million. And so that conversation is going to be ongoing over the summer as we discuss that with the Department of Corrections, who is listening, but you know, they might need some coaxing to come along. The other bill I ran deals with RDAs, which we know all about those in Ogden City. I ran a bill that would change the way blight notices go out, so the city would no longer be required, or cities across the state would no longer be required to send a blight notice to a home that is not blighted. That was the bill. So pretty straightforward, pretty common sense, and should make future RDA work a lot easier in the city, so we don't have people with homes that are in good shape being sent blight notices. Other than that, other legislation that was of note, the alcohol bill, you guys might have heard about that. We heard about that. Seems like a fairly, in my opinion, a fairly reasonable piece of legislation. Had a lot of stakeholders at the table discussing that. And since we've come out of the session, it seems to be a lot of the furor has died down related to that. And I think stakeholders are now understanding what it's doing and how it's affecting their businesses. I had a lot of businesses on 25th Street contact me with, I could tell that they did not have the full information regarding the bill, so I had to educate them on what it was doing, what it wasn't doing, and help them understand what was happening. So with that, that's my brief update. Any questions, comments, concerns, queries, or worries?
How long does the governor need to approve these or disapprove them?
Oh, he's got a little while. I don't know the exact day. I think it's
45 right. Days.
What's that?
Yes, 45 days.
45. Yeah, I was going to say sometime before May. So he's already signed, I think, about 150 of the bills out of the 535 that we passed. So he has his team of staff is reviewing all those. They make recommendations based on what the governor's initiatives and agenda is. And if there's a dispute or he feels that something's completely out of line with what he'd like to see done, he vetoes it. The one that's getting a lot of attention right now is 155, the 0.05 blood alcohol content bill. I'm seeing both sides of that issue really lobby, I guess, for a veto or not for a veto on that bill.
Questions?
Yeah.
Comments?
Well, I want to thank you for all the work you did. I know how exhausting that must be. I don't can't imagine it from your seat, but from mine, I know it's exhausting. So it must be even more so for you. Question on the House Bill 270, the halfway house beds.
Yes.
Is that a slated to be a specific interim study item for the House committee?
Yes, it will actually come to. It will probably come to my committee for interim. For discussion. So actually, no, I'll take that back. It will go to law enforcement. Lee Perry's the House chairman of that committee. And the House committee, I mean, they expressed broad support. I think we could have passed it out of committee the day that we heard it there. I asked that they not, so that we could continue discussions with Department of Corrections. That was a good faith gesture on my part to make sure we had good faith with the stakeholders. But there, philosophically, the House is there. I need to work on the Senate a little bit, but I think they'll come along with some persuasion.
What do you foresee the barriers or hurdles being?
Foresee what?
What are the specific hurdles that you foresee?
So basically it comes down to money and time. So in talking to the Department of Corrections, their concern was if we passed the bill, they would have to suddenly release half of their inmates out into the public. Because there's caps on how many inmates you can have in a specific county, and we don't have all the beds made in other counties for the inmates to be. And so part of it is figuring out how do we build that housing. We already have more than enough here in Ogden, right? But in other counties like Cache, Davis, Utah County, do we purchase land and build a new facility? Is it possible to take existing facilities like a county jail and just make some minor adaptations, you know, cut in some doors and add some security provisions to allow egress and ingress of inmates out of those? That would save some money. We know that there's extra beds to do that. And so reusing or recycling existing corrections infrastructure will help bring the cost down, and that's some of the things we're trying to identify is where is the inventory, what needs to be built, what could happen on a time frame that makes sense. The Department of Corrections' main concern was just having enough time to get things built out so we didn't have to release a bunch of folks out into the public unnecessarily. And that's a reasonable concern.
Comment about it being this bill being the opening salvo makes
right,
a lot of sense.
Right, yeah, just get the conversation going and hopefully everyone will be holding hands and singing Kumbaya next session. Yeah.
Thanks for getting it started. Here's to getting it finished. Thanks. Thank you.
I just want to comment, thank you for all you do for Ogden. And there were a lot of bills that we are noticing, including, you know, funding for the Lantern House and those kind of things. So we appreciate your support or at least your conversations around that, the domestic violence weapon, and those kind of things. So we do definitely appreciate you down there.
Well, thank you. The one final thing that I just remembered was our good landlord amendment, which we got stuck on there by the hair of our chinny chin chin with one vote to spare. So we were able to preserve our good landlord program for another day and another session. So, all right.
Any other questions or comments?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks you guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Justin Fossen. 1205 East, 2325 North in North Ogden, and that's District 7. So I cover Pleasant View, North Ogden, and the north end of Ogden City. I ran a couple of bills that I think you might have an interest in, and I also wanted to talk about some of the other issues that I've been dealing with your city specifically. The first bill that I'll address is HB 195. It was a dissolution of local districts bill. What we found with some of the issues that we've run into in the past with local districts was that the requirements to be met for dissolution of a district were impossible. There were really two paths to dissolve a local district. The first would be a vote of 100% of participants to dissolve the district, and we all know it's impossible to get 100% vote from anything, really. The other path was to be inactive for 3 years, and that proved difficult for districts who wanted to dissolve and didn't want to give up the services for that three-year period. So we created a path for the districts, actually two paths, and they mirror the creation paths for a local district. The first is by a vote of the people, so the people can petition for dissolution of a district, and it requires the district to start investigating ways that they could dissolve and ways that they could move their assets and liabilities off to another entity, whether that's the city or county or another entity that comes in to fill their place. The other path is by resolution. They can vote to dissolve themselves in a much shorter period of time than 3 years. So that does have an impact on our city councils as you look at local districts in your areas and how they're serving their service districts. So another one was HB 250, Driving Under the Influence Program Amendments. This was really a Weber County Sheriff's Department request. And what it does is it mirrors the changes that we've been making in the criminal justice system, some of the reforms that we've been doing. And it creates a program that will be piloted up here in Weber County, where if someone is arrested for a DUI, instead of sending that individual to jail and having them lose their license, the judge can order them to enter into a program where they have to take a sobriety test twice a day. So there are costs involved for the participants, but the benefit is that they get to keep their license, and their license is no longer suspended as long as they participate and are clean in the program. So it's not a rehab program, it's a monitoring program, but it does have real, hopefully positive consequences for the individuals that participate, and it's been very effective in other states. Montana, one of the highest DUI states in the U.S. has seen huge impacts in their DUIs because of this program. So recidivism has dropped, and participation in the program has had about a 98% success rate. So I ran another one that has been of interest to law enforcement, and it actually came out of a case in North Ogden, and I worked with our county attorney on the language of this bill. But essentially, when a sexual crime is committed, if the individual is HIV positive or hepatitis B or C positive, they can be charged with an enhancement to the charge of whatever the sexual misconduct was. So it allows us to place harsher penalties on those individuals who know that they're HIV positive or hepatitis B and C positive and could be potentially transmitting that disease in the act of the crime. So it mirrors 32 other states that have HIV laws, and it also mirrors our own laws on hepatitis B and C with law enforcement. So if someone exposes a law enforcement officer to hepatitis, they can also be charged in the same manner. That's been in law for a while. So this bill just really mirrored a lot of that language. And then I just wanted to bring up really quickly, our previous Ogden police chief, brought to my attention a problem that we were having in convenience stores and gas stations around our city with gambling machines, essentially. These are, you know, small machines that look harmless, but we had a lot of kids using them. We had a lot of riffraff around the machines. It was causing secondary problems, and when we started looking into it, it seemed to us to be a clear violation of the law. And so Representative Thurston down in Provo had almost identical issues with I think it was a member of his city council. And so he and I got together with the AG's office, and about a year ago, they started an investigation into this company who was operating the vast majority of the machines in Utah. Just a few weeks ago, it was right toward the end of the session, they did a statewide raid and shut down every one of those machines. And so I just want you to know that I appreciate the work that you do. I appreciate the information that we share, and I appreciate being able to work with your employees, and in particular your law enforcement. I think Representative Peterson and I really want to address real issues that are problematic for you, and do it in the right way. So with that, I'm open to any questions you might have for me.
Questions?
I have a question concerning the gambling machines. Yeah. I spoke with our chief about that last summer, and they were kind of concerned about the legality of pursuing, you know, punitive measures for people who had those or the owners of them or whatever. And it sounds like you said that the AG took the bull by the horns on that thing. But does it require any work on the state level or the city level to?
It doesn't. That's actually why the chief engaged me. He thought maybe there needed to be a change in the law. The problem that they were having is when they would pursue the company who was running this operation, their attorneys were incredibly aggressive and would push back and essentially say, no, this is not a violation of law, and if you come after us, you know, we'll sue, and you're not going to shut down our company. And so the other problem was it's more than just Ogden. It was statewide, and so it was difficult for Ogden to help or to coordinate with Davis County and Provo and the other areas of the state where we were having problems with it, and that's why the AG's office got involved. So it needed to be a statewide effort, and after investigating the law and finding that it was, they felt like, and they are, you know, the state's attorneys, they felt like it was a clear violation of Utah state law. So there was no need for us to run a bill or change anything.
Good to know. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
you. Appreciate
that.
I have a question. I'm sure you get requests, but can you just give us a brief description of how you formulate a bill?
how we formulate a bill.
Uh-huh. Because I'm sure you get requests, and that's probably where you start from, but I, or do you just go out and look at situations and say, gosh, I'll do that. So you...
Sometimes it's things that we run across, but not usually. It's usually someone who's an expert in their field, like your police chief. If that had needed a bill, that would have been a great source for it. So, you know, I'm responsive to, you know, our mayors and our city council members. I've opened up a lot of bills just for residents who see problems that they need investigating. The nice thing is, you know, if a resident brings a problem to my attention, I have a whole building full of attorneys and researchers who can look into the issue to see if it needs a solution, or if it can be solved by the state, or if it's a local control issue. But some of the bill files that I open are continuations of previous legislation. I ran a bill last year that does a better job of tracking federal funds within our state budget, and this year we needed to expand that, so it takes another bill to do that. But they come from everywhere. I've even had elementary kids, you know, bring some bill ideas to me and ask me to run them. So,
thank you.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to express the same sentiment that I said to Representative Peterson. So thank you for your service in this session. That just can't imagine how long that must be for you guys.
Sprinting a marathon, for sure.
Yeah, but I wanted to make a comment about the gambling machines, a comment of extreme appreciation, much like Representative Thurston and his constituents and council peers there. That was an issue that I was hearing a lot about from constituents here. And like you said, it may appear innocent, but the issue and the repercussions are so insidious. It's really good to hear, and I think people need to know that when an issue like that came from someone in our community, someone who recognized the need and saw the impact on themselves or their family, they brought it to local representatives that's out of our jurisdiction, but we passed it along to our administration, police chief, in this case, and then he worked with our state lawmakers, who then worked with our attorney general's office, and if need be, he would have worked with Ledger Research and General Counsel to draft a bill.
Right.
I just think that's a sign of the system working, and that for someone asking for something, at the lowest, most common and local level, and then getting what we needed at the end. So I thank you for helping to carry that forward. I know it means a lot to me personally, but to the constituents that have been reaching out to me on that specific issue, on those gambling machines in our stores in our community, I know it means a lot. Thank you.
Just to piggyback on the on these gambling machines, how can we get more details about how these operation happened in the particularly in Ogden? What was the outcome of it? Is it the end of it? Are we gonna maybe see some of these problems come back? Do we know is it public to know specific names of particular businesses that were targeted, is there a way to know more details about these?
There is. I can put you in touch with the Attorney General's office. The media actually did a pretty good job covering it. They actually came on some of the raids with us. So I know that there's some media coverage that you could find online. But the Attorney General's office would be a great source of information. I know the investigation is ongoing, but they were public with the name of the company and the number of machines and the distribution models and things like that. To my knowledge, I don't know yet whether charges have been pressed against the owners of that company, but it was basically one company operating under several different names and running this enterprise statewide. So
our officers were involved, but we're not at liberty to release that information. That has to come from the Attorney General and others. So we haven't said anything because we were told not to.
Yeah, in that statewide raid, the individual police departments were involved heavily in that, so we appreciate that.
Thank you very much for coming. And
thank you.
We'll see you next year.
Okay, it's my pleasure.
All right. Next on the agenda is the approval of minutes. The work session of February 7th, 2017. Councilmember Lopez.
Yes, Chair White. I've reviewed those minutes, and to the best of my knowledge, they are correct, with the exception of correction I asked, I pointed out earlier regarding the place of that work session meeting, which happened in the council chambers, not in the workroom. So I make a motion that with that correction, we approve the minutes.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Lopez, second by Vice Chair Hyatt. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Chair White, if I might inject a change in our agenda, I recommend a change. And as much as we have plenty, a lot of people here for the lease of city property to Family Promise of Ogden, I'd like to move item 7B3F to 7A33.
So this is a public hearing, and we are going to move that last item. Did you get that, Tracy? Okay. All right. This is a voice vote to move that, so we need a motion.
Second.
Yes. Oh, sorry. There's a motion by Vice Chair Hyatt.
Sorry. Can you clarify which one? So you said 7B3, and then you said F. Did you mean?
It's 7F.
Oh, over here. Over here? Yeah. Okay, got it.
We're just going to move the consideration of the lease up to number one.
So. Yep, 7F. Sorry. I got myself confused. Thank you for the correction.
Oh, I need a second. Sorry.
Second.
We have a motion then by Vice Chair Hyatt, second by Councilmember Nadolski to move that. This is a voice vote to move it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We're going to then move the consideration of the lease up. So with that, is
Chair Brandon Cooper will be making the presentation. And if he gets anything wrong, Mara Brown will be helping him.
You have to come pretty close then. Chair White, members of the council, thanks for your time and thank you for moving this up. I'm sure those that are associated with this action tonight will be appreciative as well. It's fairly simple. Family Promise of Ogden is requesting a lease from Ogden City for the retired and partially vacant fire station number 3, located on 340 Washington Boulevard. The terms of that lease are fairly simple. It's from April 1st of this year to March 30th of next year. It's a zero rent lease, but there will be maintenance items that are associated with the occupancy by Family Promise. Those items will be covered by Family Promise. So those are detailed in the lease. The operation that would exist in the facility would be a day center associated with the overall operations of Family Promise. Family Promise is a nonprofit organization. They're associated with the National Family Promise Organization. It's they work with a coalition of churches that are committed to helping families with children move from homelessness to independence. Most of that work is partnering with that coalition of churches to provide families with overnight shelters and additional resources. So those types of things are offered in local church facilities. Those things are not offered in the facility that we're talking about tonight at the old fire station. The purpose of that is to help them gain some stability. And then in the day center operations, that's where they focus on the securing of employment, other social services, permanent housing, those types of things. So the operations in the fire station will be different than what happens in the churches, but both of those are connected in terms of Family Promise's mission to help those achieve sustainability and independence. As part of our local code and also part of state law, we're required to look at this in terms of the benefit received by the city. Because it is a zero rent lease, there are three major benefits that I believe are derived from offering a zero rent lease. The first one being the public safety factor of taking a otherwise vacant building and allowing a business to occupy that space.
It's a lights on, eyes on the street kind of a thing. It prevents any potential vagrancy or vandalism that might occur in an otherwise vacant building. It also reduces the maintenance costs of the facility that otherwise would be required to be handled by the fire station slash the city, or the fire department slash the city. So the maintenance of the parking lots, the snow removal, the day-to-day wear and tear of the building is all handled by Family Promise through the terms of the lease. And then lastly, we're helping to mitigate the impacts of homelessness, which is an important thing for the community, and especially for those that homelessness factor associated with children and families. And as a subsequent result of that, through their services, hopefully we see a reduction in unemployment as well. So with that, administration recommends that the council approve resolution 2017-5, which is the finding of adequate consideration for the zero rent lease between the city and Family Promise. Any questions?
Well, when you say Family Promises, what can constitute that family? Will there be husband and wife and maybe children be attending this then?
I believe so. I think they have a fairly, from my understanding, talking with those folks that run the organization, they have a fairly stringent application process. So they'll be looking at who comes into the facility and what services can be offered.
And so if the children need to go to schooling, will they go to the Ogden City Schools or Weber County, or how's that handled?
Good question. We have some folks here from Family Promise. I'm not aware of those details, but they do. I'm not sure if it's appropriate to have them up, if you would like to answer some of those specific questions.
If you hold on to that question, and I have a question for you. So if the lease amount had been a market rate lease, it would not have come to us at all. I mean, the mayor could just sign that lease agreement.
Right.
But because it's a zero.
Exactly. So the statute requires us to look at the benefits derived and then to ask you to approve those benefits, and that's what the resolution is doing.
And does that building have an occupancy limit?
I'm sorry, an occupancy?
That building have an occupancy limit by any chance, or do you know that?
I'm sure it does, based on its size and the reason why it was built. I believe it has occupancy. I don't know what that is, unfortunately.
Appropriately zoned?
Mm-hmm. It is appropriately zoned.
Any other questions for Mr. Cooper? All right. And I'm sorry, I forgot your name already, but there was a couple of questions. Yes. Please, if you would address those questions, that would be great. And state your name.
I'm Nancy Davis Broderick, and I recognize quite a few of you. I was here last June or January, and so thank you for letting me be here again. The day center, what we have is we are going to be working with Ogden City School District, and we're working with the other districts around Ogden, that when the families come back to the day center, we will have a the van brings the families from the congregations at night, brings them to the day center, and then from there we'll get all of the kids that are supposed to be enrolled in school to school. So we're working with, like I said, the Ogden City School District is specifically to make sure that they can bring in the bus drivers to our place and get the kids to the schools. If they're under school age, then they will help them get into daycare or whatever, because there won't be a licensed daycare there at all. And then there will never be more than 14 people at a time, but then we have our part-time person, which would be the director or full-time director and a part-time person, the bus driver. So potentially there could be 20 people at a time, but there would never be more than that. And again, never overnight.
In the firehouse, there's a large bay area where they have the fire trucks. Mm-hmm. There, are you using that area for special purpose or not?
I believe the fire station said that they still wanted to have part of that because they're going to have one side of the building leased for some things going on with the city. And so we'll be able to use part, but it wouldn't be parking or anything. It would probably be from going from the offices to the laundry facilities, which are in the front of that bay.
So thanks for being here, and happy to see this proposal and be able to talk about it. Obviously, I see you're a chapter of a national organization. This is a model that's not an experimental model. This is a proven model, mm-hmm. and it's my understanding it's quite successful. Can you elaborate on the rates of success of bringing these families in need into your program and then putting them into a situation of stability?
Okay, sure, yeah. There are over 202 right now functioning affiliates, and there are 12 in development, which is what we are. We're hoping to be developed next month. but what happens is, since we have small family units, like I said, we only do 14 people at a time, up to five families at a time. So we're able to give them really intense case management. So helping them get back on, if they don't have a job, get a job. If they do have a job but they need social services, or they have problems with budgeting or their parenting skills, we use the resources that are already in the community, and that's how all of these affiliates work. And so based on that, since they are not just given, you know, come check in with me once a month or once a week, they're there with our case manager every single day and working on their plan. So nationally, the average of getting these families back into self-sufficiency is 75%, and in Salt Lake, it's 95%. So it's huge there, and they're doing a fantastic job. They've served over 800 families that have gotten bit. So 95% of 800 of them have not fallen back into homelessness. And so that is our goal. And that's why this program is so great, is we have to do the work, but we don't have to come up with how does it work or what do? We have the guides and fantastic resources. And so we're able to implement it in our churches. There's enough people in the community that want to help. So we have over 600 volunteers that are going to be coming in and bringing the meals and taking them to schools and doing all the stuff. So it's all a community effort as well, not just, you know, a couple people. And that's usually why it's worked so well over the country.
Chair White, may I have a couple more follow-ups?
Yeah, please.
So what is the average duration that a family would spend in the...
The average is 2 months. And when, you know, the market tanked in 2008, they had it was more sometimes like 3 months. But our average is we expect to have these families turned over. Most of the time, the same family that enters the program will not go on another rotation in the church. So each church takes the families 1 week out of a quarter, and normally by the next quarter, they're all different families. So the getting them out is really quick, too. So within, the average is 2, sometimes 3 months.
So using some of the numbers you told us before of up to 5 families at a time,
mm-hmm.
So you could expect to see up to 120 families taken. Did I do that right?
No, we would do like up to
a year.
We would probably get 50 families off trying to get them out of being homeless, because we only do 5 families at a time, no more than 14 people.
Right.
So if they're in there for 2 months, then that would be about, 6 times? I'm
30.
Under pressure, where's my calculator?
30 families, 14 of each, right?
Up to that. And that when you had mentioned what the family units look like, it could be anywhere from a grandmother and a mom and their children, or a mom and a dad and their child. The whole idea is they have children, because that's our main goal, is to get the kids off the street, you know, and in a nice environment.
So those are impressive numbers and significant impact.
Yeah.
My final question is, this is a 364-day agreement that we're considering.
Mm-hmm.
What is your long-term plan or hopes after this first year of operation?
We're hoping that we'll be able to have another building, of course, not at a great discount, but we are looking for keeping this program here in Ogden and utilizing either buildings that are already available or private property. We want to stay here, and so if we get this lease, we aren't going to be stopping all of a sudden. We'll still have our development group looking for another day center, but we'll be able to open right now and start working on the families here in Ogden.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
How do you guys work with families to assist with mental health?
When the families are brought into our program by whether they're referred from to the Lantern House or from your congregations or wherever, the intake process is really intense where it'll find out what have been part of their problems of why they're in this situation. I mean, it's not that all of a sudden they just decide not to pay their bills. You know, are they having medical issues? Are they having problems that they can't keep a job because they have mental issues? Those kind of things. We don't take people that have really strong criminal backgrounds or domestic violence, because there's other places that are more qualified to take care of that. So if in the case of a mental issue, if they have depression or whatever, the part of the director is to help them get those resources that are already in the community and help them get on a plan, whether it's helping them get the medication or getting them into doctors that they couldn't afford. That's part of what the director's issues are, or help with them, and that's why they are so successful, because they don't just say, hey, you lost your job, why? Let's get you on another job. What is it that's causing this, and what is it that's keeping you from being self-sufficient and moving forward?
Thank you.
Are refugees' families going to be part of these, the groups that go in, or is it just primarily just homeless individuals?
You know, that hasn't really, I haven't been brought up with that, but if somebody's brought in and they're a refugee family and they're homeless, then if they fit the qualifications and they're on the list and we have the opening, then I don't know why we would want to turn them away if they have kids.
I thank you, and I applaud you and the congregations that have come together in the city. I mean, it's a great partnership, and it's one that we see really working in our city. So thank you very much for taking this on.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks.
Motion?
Public hearing. Oh, yeah, it's a public. Sorry, you're
public
right.
Hearing, right.
Public hearing. Is there anyone else that would like to? Yeah.
Yes. I would make a motion that we open the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion to open the public hearing by Councilmember Blair and second by Councilmember Garner. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Public hearing is open if there's anyone that would like to come up and speak regarding this issue.
Hi, good evening. My name is Kelly Martin, and I'm a teacher at the Utah Military Academy in Riverdale. I want to thank you all for taking this issue on. I want you to know that last year I had two of my students come to me and looking for help because they were living in their car. Homeless children in Ogden is a big problem, and any little thing that we can do to help families with kids, we really need to do that, and I just really thank you for taking time for us tonight and for considering this motion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelly? Anyone else?
Ian, there's no more movement. I'll move that we close the public hearing on this issue.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Councilmember Blair to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. All right.
And with that, I'll make a motion that we adopt proposed resolution 2017-5.
I second it.
We have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Councilmember Stevens, to adopt the joint proposed resolution 2017-5. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Oh, aye, sorry. Garner.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please go forward and do great work. Thank you.
They had some stories about the basement down there that.
Tell the stories.
Don't.
Haunted spirits.
The pole is gone, you know, all of those things.
You do want more information, you know, you can Google and look this up and
They have a wonderful video that you can watch, so thank you.
Thank you. Well, we know how to clear out a room.
Leaving happy.
Yeah. All right, we have a few more items under our public hearings, and we're going to go back to 7A, the annual action plan.
Ward Ogden will be making that presentation. He's got a great last name, don't you think?
Madam Chair, members of the council, each year we amend our action plan, and that's the process we're involved in right now. The action plan is the plan that we put together for the use of our federal dollars that come to us for community and economic development. We have an entitlement for those funds, and we have to put together an application each year for those funds. And so in the spring of the year, we do an application, and then that outlines our projects and programs to be funded for the year, the goals that we have for the use of those dollars, and then a budget. In that budget, we estimate our entitlement, our program income from the proceeds of the loans that we issue, and the funds that weren't spent the prior year are carried over. So those three sources that we put into the budget. So during the course of the year, we need to do an amendment when we finally realize what the actual numbers are compared to the estimates. So that's what we're doing tonight. We've had work sessions on this, and so we've had some discussion about it. The bottom line is that we're increasing the budget by $1,679,397. That's quite a bit. And most of it has to do with projects that were started in a year, and we thought we'd have them finished, but we carried over some money. We also have quite a bit of money that was kind of double use. In other words, we purchased homes with funds, with the federal funds, and then we sold the homes during the year and got the money back again. And so we need to put that back in the budget and spend it. There's a federal requirement that we have to handle our program income first. And so a significant amount of money is through the proceeds of sale of homes. And I'll just kind of give you a brief rundown on that. The funds, as we do the adjustments, are typically kept within their line items. So if we budget the funds and we carry over those funds, it goes back into the same line item. So that's what we've been doing for year after year. And so that's what we talked about in the work session as well. A few things are changes to that typical procedure. We have moved $300,000 from the target area public improvements and put them in the special economic development project. There's some increases to the microenterprise loan program, $140,000 there. And the small business loan program increased by $110,000. And again, that's due to the program income from the proceeds of the loan repayments. in the home program, for where we purchase and rehab and resell homes, that amount is increased by $817,000. And so that's quite a bit of funds that has to do with just recycling the dollars. So it's the same dollar used a couple of times. That's pretty much the gist of the amendment to the budget. There's an additional procedure that we need to follow. The action plan is the proposed budget that we send to HUD, Housing and Urban Development Department, along with its plan, but we also need to open the city's budget and make the city's budget correspond with the action plan budget. So that's the second item, is to make the city's budget correspond with that. So. And the third item that we're looking at is a change to the Central Business District Revitalization Program. That's the area that is from Wall Avenue to Adams Avenue, 20th to 27th Street. And that's the kind of a focus area where economic development funds were placed at Community Development Block Grant, again, was put into this program to help revitalize the area. It had a fairly flexible guidelines in terms of the types of projects that could be done, but it was really trying to aim at a lot of improvements to buildings and also creating jobs and economic opportunity. And now there are other opportunities outside of the Central Business District. We want to continue to focus on the Central Business District, but also take advantage of opportunities outside of that district. So it's proposed that we change the name from CBD Revitalization Program to Special Economic Development Projects and make the boundaries citywide.
So Ward, can you stand just a little closer to the microphone so people can hear
voice?
You?
I'm sorry. And now I'm done with my presentation. I'm sorry. Need to repeat anything? I'm sorry. Are there any questions to
those? That's where the rewind button comes into play, huh?
I think the key thing of that last statement was just that this program now will be citywide.
Right. Yeah. Citywide.
That's a great improvement, I think.
Ward, I do have one question.
Okay.
As it relates to the home program and the, use your term, the recycling of dollars,
mm-hmm.
can you clarify for me how that recycling of dollars works?
Sure.
Year to year.
So we'll use dollars to purchase a home. Say it's a HUD home or a home that's a foreclosed home or something that's available for us that needs our attention. It's under the program guideline. And so we'll use some funds to purchase that house and then renovate it so that there's really kind of a number of things that we use the funds for, but purchase and renovation is mainly what it's used for. And then we sell the home, we get the money back. And if we get it back during the year that we initially spent the money, then we have to put it back in the budget. So it's not necessarily new dollars, it's kind of the same dollars reused once or twice in the year.
So as we build on that home program year to year to year and we continue to grow the amount that we're carrying forward, are we
theoretically
able
to, it could be.
Are we able to theoretically increase by the same mm-hmm. magnitude the number of homes we?
It could be, yes. And again, sometimes we have to subsidize, so it's not all 100%. So sometimes we get all our money back, sometimes we don't. Sometimes there's a bit of a subsidy involved. So in general, it kind of, because we receive just over $300,000 a year in home money each year, so theoretically that pool can expand.
As long as we have the
As long as we have the federal grants, so we're still waiting to hear on that. Of course, the proposed budget from the administration of federal is to completely eliminate the block grant and the home program, but they don't really think that's going to go through, so we'll have to see. So we'll be coming to you with a proposed budget for our 18 fiscal year within the next few months, and hopefully we'll know more by then.
Ward.
Questions?
Thank you. I just, you know, I appreciate it, and you guys really do a great job of revitalizing homes or building new ones even, so thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And one more comment is this: these programs and these budgets are just so complicated, and compliance is key. So we really appreciate the close attention to detail that you spend on, you and your staff spend on this.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Chair Wright, I would make a motion that we open the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion to open the public hearing by Vice Chair Blitt, or Vice Chair Heyer, and second by Council Member Nadolski. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So the public hearing is open. So if anyone wants to come up and talk about the annual action plan amendment, or the annual action plan budget amendment, or the Central Business District Revitalization Program change. Please come on up.
Seeing no movement, I will make a motion that we close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion by Council Member Blair, second by Vice Chair Heyer to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. With that, we have three action items.
I will go ahead and make a motion on proposed resolution 2017-4 to approve the FY 2017 annual action plan amendment number one.
Second.
We have a motion by Council Member Blair, second by Council Member Garner to adopt proposed resolution 2017-4. This is a roll call vote.
Council Member Blair?
I'm ready. Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
Mr. White, I make a motion that we approve proposed ordinance 2017-6.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Lopez, second by Councilmember Blair to adopt proposed ordinance 2017-6. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
Chair White, I'll make a motion that we adopt proposed resolution 2017-9 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Nadolski, second by Councilmember Garner to adopt proposed resolution 2017-9. This is also a roll call vote.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Vice Chair White? I'm sorry, Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes. All right. Thank you, Ward. That was good. All right. Next on our agenda is the new commercial air service.
Lisa Stout will be presenting the budget amendment. And probably the promissory note while you're there.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair White, Vice Chair Heyer, Council members. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening. The ordinance before you for consideration is in a budget opening to the Ogden City budget of, let me find the right ordinance, to increase the budget by $3,005,000. This includes an appropriation of BDO lease revenue from retained earnings in the BDO fund to be transferred to the CIP fund, to the airport fund, and then also includes a loan to the airport fund. The first appropriation is in the CIP fund. This is for a parking improvement CIP that is currently with the Planning Commission and will be coming forward for adoption into the fiscal year 17 CIP ordinance once the Planning Commission has reviewed that. Additionally, we're appropriating $1,140,000 from BDO lease revenue to the airport fund. This will set up a budget to be used for, in conjunction with the parameters resolution that was passed for the air service. This establishes the budget so that we can move forward with this process. There may be some changes coming forward as additional agreements are signed and finalized. This includes a subsidy, an airline guarantee subsidy of $500,000, a operational reserve of $500,000, a marketing budget of $100,000, and a budget for a familiarization tour package of $40,000. We're also appropriating $125,000 in this fund from anticipated parking revenue to appropriate for wages to help staff additional people at the airport. And the final action in this budget is to appropriate a loan. We do have a ordinance that authorizes a note between the airport fund and the BDO lease revenue fund. This is a $50,000 note tied to either PTIF or to the Treasury note to be adjusted annually. It has a five-year term with no prepayment penalty. It can be paid off sooner or would be due 5 years from the effective date of the note. And we'd ask you to also consider that ordinance tonight. And
Lisa, that loan is for a specific piece of equipment.
It is. It is for a specific piece of equipment. It's called an Air Start. It helps turbine engines. I'm sure airplane buffs know a lot more about this piece of equipment than I do. But FAA rules are very strict on what the airport could pay back. This would qualify because that piece of equipment will stay on the airport and benefit the airport solely. Any questions regarding this budget opening or the loan?
I think we're making some assumptions that the Planning Commission is going to approve their
petition. So we have the ability to close these accounts in our in our general ledger, so they may not be used until all of the agreements and required documents are in place, which is what how we will monitor this, so that it cannot be spent until that CIP ordinance is also adopted. The timing was such that we got the budget opening put together so quick so we could move forward that we didn't have time to get through the Planning Commission at the same time.
Can you review the reserve? We have $500,000 in reserve. How is that working with that aspect?
I will defer to Tom. Is Tom here? To discuss the terms of the reserve itself.
There are two reserves, so which one do we want to address?
One is the airline assurance reserve and then the travel agency operation.
The airline assurance reserve is basically is the proposed assurance that is given to the airline that meets the RFP requirements. If they meet it and they're selected, what we have given them is an offset to the staging costs, which are significant. Their permitting and staging costs can run significantly in the millions of dollars. One of the assurances that we give them is that we will stay with the program for at least 1 year. That money comes back to us at a rate of 20% per quarter for every quarter that they stay in place. And so it says it's a standby account, and that money then is reserved back. And then at the end of the period, if everything goes well, then the reserve account is basically returned back to the city. The second account, which is for operations of the carrier in making sure that we meet the fixed costs of operation to the carrier, part of what we do is make sure that each flight, which is a little different than a chartered carrier to operation, each flight has to have the money set aside and in escrow before it can fly. And so if we are short seats, then we would take from that fund and put the money back. If there's excess funds, it goes back into the fund. If at the end of the year we are short funds, then the fund is gone. If there are excess funds, it's returned based on the agreements that we have with our county partners and ourselves.
So if you have 95 or 100% full, then that's
then the
a benefit.
Money is, then the money will be returned to each of the participants in the fund.
In our notes, it says it's required by the FAA, these reserves.
Yeah, that's part of that charter, the charter reserve. So every flight that goes has to have its money available so that it can pay for all of its operational costs, and then it's released. In a normal carrier, a non-charter carrier, all the money goes into a big pot. If that flight doesn't fly for some reason, then there's a credit to the seat. In this particular case, you have to give cash back. And so the cash has to be available to give it back.
Thank you. Any other questions for anyone else? All right. This is public.
So, Chair White, I will go ahead and make a motion that we open the public hearing for the two items listed under 7B, both 1 and 2, the FY 2017 budget amendment and the interfund loan promissory note.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Blair, second by Councilmember Garner to open the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Public hearing is open. If there's anyone that wants to come up and speak about the budget amendments or the loan promissory note, please do so.
Seeing no movement, I'll make a motion that we close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Vice Chair Heyer to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
I'm ready.
I'll make a motion that we adopt proposed ordinance 2017-12.
Second.
Motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Blair to adopt proposed ordinance 2017-12. This is a roll call Roll call vote. Wow.
Member Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Gardner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
And I'll make a motion that we adopt proposed resolution 2017-7, and this is the interfund loan promissory note for $50,000.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Vice Chair Heyer, to adopt proposed resolution 2017-7. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
That's important not only for the present situation at the airport, but for the future growth that we're going to have there. And I applaud Tom and his group for moving ahead and trying to improve the conditions out there. And when we get it all put together, I think it'd be worth having an open house out there and let the public see what plans we have for the airport there and opportunities that are available at the airport.
Comments?
Just, and the air start equipment is so essential for these jets. You know, so they don't have to pull the equipment from Salt Lake and get. Yeah. So it'll help in any delays that may have occurred.
I did a little checking on that since we had some public input a couple of weeks ago. I have a relative that's a Delta pilot and flies some new airplanes. And he said that, even the newer planes need that once in a while. The power management system on an airplane is not required for an airplane to actually fly, but it is required to start. And so they can get it to airports sometimes where they, without one of those functioning, and you've either got to be able to fix theirs, which we can't, or you got to be able to start it with this piece of equipment. So it's kind of a crucial piece for us.
Well, thank you.
All right. Let's moving on to the budget amendment for the 27th Street sanitary sewer repairs.
It's Lisa Stout's night.
Oh, Lisa.
Thank you, council members. I usually know how to empty a room, so I'm surprised we sorry. The ordinance before you for consideration is a budget opening that will increase the city budget by $2,658,543. This budget opening does multiple things. One of the most important things is to appropriate some money in the sanitary sewer for an emergency repair on 27th Street. Quickly, I'd like to review the other things that are happening in this budget opening with you. We're appropriating money in the fund balance, in the general fund to to purchase some software for the attorney's office. The state is making a change, and this will be required software. The appropriation for that is $50,000. Additionally, we're moving some funds from management services to non-departmental to help cover a cost increase in the prosecutor contract, the city prosecutor contract that the city has. That's a $32,000 increase in that contract this year. Additionally, we're appropriating $770,000 more in BDO lease revenue. We had an issue with the distribution from the state that was resolved in November. Those funds were received by the city in December, and this budget opening will recognize $590,000 in the engineering department and $180,000 that will be transferred to the CIP fund for street improvements. We are also appropriating a $65,000 budget for an energy audit. This will help develop a plan for improvements that will supposedly generate cost savings. Once that audit is done, that will come to you for presentation and also
further action if they decide to implement any of those improvements. We're also doing some cleanup with our carry forward. We had some issues with how it was carried forward in the fire budget and appropriating a new emergency management grant of $16,500 for supplies in the fire department. We are also appropriating an arts grant of $2,000. This is a general support grant, and a ramp easy grant of $2,500. Excuse me. Also in community events. In the CIP fund, we are moving some money from the Harrison project. These were WACOG funds that the city still can use on Harrison. We're moving it out of the Harrison because a project that had a defined area to a separate CIP fund where it could be used at any place on Harrison Boulevard. And I know the engineering has good plans for those funds. We're additionally appropriating the $180,000 from the general fund to the CIP for the additional BDO lease revenue. We had some projects that are finished now. We're unappropriating any remaining budgets and appropriating those to Grant Avenue in the amount of $100,000, Centennial Trails in the amount of $90,000, and park improvements in the amount of $90,000, and also to street construction in the amount of $119,500 in the CIP fund. In the sanitary sewer fund, we are appropriating the $1 million for the emergency repair at 27th Street. And we are also moving some money from one project that is closed out and finished to the sanitary sewer master plan projects. That's the list of engineering projects that they will just go down and finish those through this CIP appropriation. In the airport fund, this is again just a carry forward grant cleanup of $6,950. And in the BDO fund, we are appropriating retained earnings to transfer to the general fund. This will fund the prosecutor software of $50,000 and the energy audit of $65,000. In the storm sewer, there is no additional appropriation. We're just moving funds from one project because it was finished to another project. And in the miscellaneous grants funds, we are appropriating additional grant awards that were awarded this year. The majority of those relate to law enforcement. The detail is there. The total amount appropriated in the miscellaneous grants is $234,781. And finally, we are appropriating $190,000 in the major grants fund. This is to pay off a loan that went into default using money that was set aside from a special purpose grant the city received years ago. This use of these funds does qualify, and we're asking, we have an agreement with the lender of this loan that the city will step in and pay this off. So we're asking you to appropriate those funds for this purpose. Any questions?
What was the nature of the big loan?
I'm sorry?
What was the nature of the big loan that defaulted?
It was an approved program that the city had where the city acted as a guarantee for people who couldn't go get bank loans. I think we've got maybe two or three. Oh, word is gone. Two or three of these loans that are outstanding. The city does have first position on property related to this loan, and I think the intent is to sell that property and recoup the most of the money. Tom is here. If you do have additional questions, he may be able to.
I get to bark tonight. I just want to make a note or a comment that is not all of this money is not dedicated to the 27th Street sanitary sewer repairs. It falls under the et cetera as well. Okay.
What was the question? What was the question? I'm sorry, I had to run out for a second.
The question was, what was the nature of the default loans, the default defaulted BIC loans. The nature of the $190,000 BIC loans that default went into default.
Those are typically in all of the business, there are a number of them that default at times. And in this particular case, I'm trying to remember the exact nature of the ones that it's just the recognition of those default loans along a period of time. And I'm trying to remember which ones were involved, but they're typically the central business district loans that we've worked with, and we can't work them out. And in that particular case, they're ones that we've just kind of written off and taken the losses on.
So in this case, for the $190,000, will we be taking possession of any property as a result of these?
Typically, when we get to this stage, there's very little liquidation, and if it does come in, it'll come in another budget, just like that was.
And I think on this case, though, we are. But we probably would not name names here in council meeting.
Okay. I guess, so we are taking some possession of assets to.
Hold on just a second. Let me talk to Lisa real quick. Sometimes it's good to have all the context. This one we will. We'll have 100% recapture on this one. So I thought it was another one, and I apologize for not being up on
it. He's got his dance shoes on tonight.
That was not a good answer on my part. I apologize, and you can take me to the woodshed a little later, but I was kind of missing that. So this one has recovery in it because we have excess of valuation in the asset.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you have any more of those loans coming up that may go into default?
Yeah, we do. Actually, we have two or three that'll come out that are currently in the process. Not of that amount. They're typically smaller amounts. But, yeah, we do have some that are going to come up.
So we'll go through the same process with those things.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Lisa, Tom, public hearing.
So I'll make a motion that we open the public hearing regarding item
7C.
Item 7C, the 2017 budget amendment.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Gardner, second by Councilmember Blair.
Sorry, did you open a public hearing? Did I have
to open the public hearing? This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
An opportunity for anybody to come up and talk about.
Seeing no movement, I make a motion that we close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Garner to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And I make a motion that we adopt Ordinance 2017-8.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Blair, to adopt the proposed Ordinance 2017-8. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes. Next on our agenda is capital improvement plan amendment.
This is Lisa once again.
So if you haven't cleared us out yet, you're still here.
Impressive. Thank you again. this is an amendment to the fiscal year 2017 CIP plan. This is a CIP that came forward. Real Salt Lake was interested in partnering with the city to do a futsal court over at the Marshall White Center using the area that had been a tennis court. The Planning Commission reviewed the CIP and they all voted yes. There were no negative votes in support of this. My understanding is Real will come forward with $40,000 to put into this project, and the city will come up with 10 from an existing operating budget is where we will find the money. Do you have any questions regarding this amendment?
Will be completed this year?
I think they want to start as soon as possible.
Yeah, this will be a great opportunity for the youth in that area and a better utilization of the space.
Is there an age limit to play? Can we play or? No, just kidding.
Oh, joke. How old are you?
How old are you?
Yeah. What other questions can we ask Lisa that she wouldn't know?
I'll just look to someone that's smarter.
Questions can we ask?
Thank you very much.
And Tom's not coming to the rescue on this one.
He is paying attention, so. All right. Public hearing.
I make a motion that we open the public hearing on ordinance 2017-7.
I second it.
We have
a motion.
Motion, thank you, by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Stevens to open the public hearing. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. This is an opportunity for anybody to come up and talk about the futsal court.
I make a motion that we close the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Garner to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
And I'll make a motion now that we'll adopt proposed ordinance 2017-7.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Councilmember Lopez to adopt proposed ordinance 2017-7. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes.
And I just really want to thank Rial, you know, for coming and supporting the youth in our community. This is, you know, a great investment. It'll be fun to see it being used.
And anybody over the age of Councilmember Lopez cannot play this game.
Oh, man. Oh, son.
Yeah. All right. Next on the agenda is the capital improvement plan.
And everybody participates tonight.
Thanks.
So, Madam Chair, members of the Council, what you have in front of you here is the FY18 to FY22 Capital Improvement Plan. I'm going to go through some of the background a little bit more quickly than usual because I think a number of the people in this room have been through this presentation a few times. So, but just to provide a little bit of background, the CIP plan itself is a five-year rolling plan. So. It's the upcoming fiscal year plus the 4 years after that. A CIP project is anything over $30,000 that improves or builds the city's physical plant. This is new construction, rehabilitation, can include acquisition of land and some studies that would lead to CIP projects. Some of our major funding sources for the CIP, of course, the general fund, and that includes the BDO lease revenue, federal and state grants, BNC road funds, citizen participation where we have it, enterprise funds, bonds, and some other things like ramp grants and other partnerships. So just in short, CIP helps us, or the CIP process helps us to scope and prioritize these CIP projects. The process goes through the Planning Commission, so that helps to ensure that the plan is consistent with our general plan and our community plans. And then, of course, it helps to inform the budget, and that's something you'll be seeing here in a few weeks. So if we look at the plan that has been proposed, so there are 66 general fund CIP projects, and this includes the 65 that were in your plan as originally proposed, plus that FL010 fuel tank improvement project that we've tracked along with that. So 66 total, 65 in the original proposal that you got, plus that that additional one. Seven enterprise fund utility projects, four ramp grants, that we've submitted. And with this new FY 18 to 22 plan, 22 of the projects included in that are new for this this project or this plan. So a total of just over $219 million total, and that's all years, all sources of funds. When we break it down a little bit by department, so our general fund departments, if you look at the numbers here, this is the upcoming fiscal year, and then all the future years together. For CED, they've got just over $69 million in projects listed. Fire department has $3.2 million. Management services, $5.1. Non-departmental, they've got $15.9 total in the plan. It's worth noting here with that number that $15 million of that is the Union Station renovation. So the vast majority of that one is that Union Station. The police department just has one project in this plan, and that's $132,000. Public services, $56.4 million, and then the ramp grants, just under $500,000. So when we look at the same thing with the enterprise funds, the airport projects altogether, just under $17 million. Golf course, $1.4 million, sanitary sewer, $8 million, the storm sewer, $9.5 million, and the water utility, just under $33 million. And all that together, that's where we get the $219 million. So when we look at the breakdown for the sources of funds for those projects that are proposed for this upcoming year, the general fund is 10.7. Federal grants, 2.2, state grants, 186,000, BNC road funds, 237,000, enterprise funds, 4.7, and then the 28 million with the other, that includes the WACOG funding and some other federal and state grants that are more specific to the Grant Avenue Promenade. So everything, all sources and funds for FY18 is $46.8 million. And next, just a quick review of how we got to now. So with the review of the process toward the end of October last year, the plan, after it had been developed, was submitted to the Planning Commission and the City Council at the same time, per your ordinance. The Planning Commission got a chance to look at that at a meeting there in December, and they reviewed the plan and gave you a recommendation of approval. And then just after the first of the year, you all got the first look with our council staff review. That was our introduction of the plan to you. A few weeks after that, on February 14th, we had directors and other representatives from administration come and address specific projects that we had included for questioning. Then the next week after that, we had you rank your top 10. As we've talked in the work session, administration has their top 10 ranking that comes with the CIP that's submitted to you, and then we have you rank your top 10 projects as well. And then a few weeks ago, you all set the public hearing for tonight. So what we expect next, obviously, is for you to hold the public hearing tonight. We are anticipating that you would approve the project tonight. We haven't heard any proposed changes or any issues. The one project that is included that I mentioned before, that FL010, that fuel tank improvement project, when we talked to you a couple of months ago, the thought was that that project would track with this, and we may have you adopt the plan and then amend the plan immediately following to add that project to this current CIP. However, we figured a better way to do that would be to add that to your Schedule A in the ordinance already. So typically changes to funding or moving fiscal years for projects, things like that, that's done with that Schedule A. And we found that that was a cleaner way to do that. So that project, if you adopt the ordinance as it's proposed, that project will be added to the plan. You don't need to make any separate motion or do anything else with that. So as I mentioned, once the plan is adopted, then administration will take that, and that will be used to inform the budget that will be presented to you the first Tuesday in May, May 2nd. So that's all I have. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer those.
I do have a burning question.
Yes.
The capital improvement plan that was approved 5 years ago, the fifth year of that capital improvement plan, how does it bear with this year's proposal?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't, I've only been working on the CIP for a couple of years, so I'm not sure if Janine was working on it at the time. I haven't done that analysis. I sort of started mine, year over year, last year to this year, but I haven't gone back that far.
I just wonder how, you know, if it's productive to go 5 years or not,
right.
and that would kind of help to know that.
I think it'd be worth looking at, and I hope to build that over time. So,
okay, thank you.
And just a comment, you've done an awesome job bird dogging this every step of the way since last Halloween. So,
appreciate it.
Thank you for doing that for us.
Thank you.
He asked to do that.
He did. He volunteered.
Takes all types. Thanks, man.
We should ask Lisa if she has any comments.
Do you want everyone to leave?
Make a motion to open the public hearing.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Nadolski, second by Councilmember Garner to open the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody want to come up and talk about this? Nope.
Seeing no movement, I'll make a motion that we close the public hearing regarding the CIP plan.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Garner, second by Councilmember Blair to close the public hearing. All in favor?
Aye.
With that, I will make a motion that we adopt proposed ordinance 2017-5.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Blair, second by Vice Chair Heyer, to adopt proposed ordinance 2017-5. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. That passes. Yay. You know what? I know that we probably don't need a break, but I think the scouts need to be commended for staying here. And has anyone been able to help them with their questions?
I think we're going to let them ask them themselves. Yeah. They'll be here. So.
All right.
We have two items left.
Yeah. I think
just giving them the opportunity to skedaddle if they wanted to.
We should give them the badge.
I know.
For asking out.
Well, we're almost done.
Yeah. Oh, right.
All right. Next on the agenda, reports from administration.
Tom will be making this presentation. We don't think he'll need any help, but we're not sure.
Never stepping out again, that's for sure. Chair White, council members, tonight I want to talk about the project, and we've done a lot of preparatory work in some of the other budget openings on funding Destination Express, which is funded through a CDBG loan and through our special economic development project area, which is an extension of what was originally known as the Central Business District Revitalization Program. One of the things that we've been trying to do as we have started to work now on the revitalization of the airport and concentrate some of our resources is we began with the notice to the air travel, especially the charter industry, that we wanted to begin services. We made the industry aware that that's what we wanted to do, and realize that one of the issues that we have with charters is that they're really great at carrying and the logistics of moving people to and from various destinations, but they weren't really good at being able to book seats because they're not in the normal commercial airline industry. One of the things as we looked around the country looking for what we call the front end of the booking services is that there are a number of companies around the country that do the front end, but none of them basically understood our market or were really focused on making Ogden a destination. And one of the strategic initiatives that we have with what we're doing is to focus on creating Ogden as a tourism destination. After a great deal of soul searching and looking around, we basically decided that we would work with a couple of local, and I mean local, one from here in the city and another that had extensive experience in the travel industry and try to put together a front-end program that would basically focus on the development of Ogden as a destination location. So we had really looked at Destination Express, which is a startup, which is Randall Hunt and Bruce Stratford. And their particular charter with us is to create, obviously, interest in the flights in a couple of different areas. One is in the travel, for which they're very well-known. They would work with large booking companies that do this around the country that basically use charters to carry people to cruise ships and to other particular areas, and that's an area of expertise. But also importantly, work with our local business population in northern Utah to make sure that they establish and realize that there are generally regularly used routes to major destinations in which they can utilize for flights. And as we indicated in a survey that I provide you in a different packet, that those destinations were really focused on LA and Oakland, and so we needed to be able to promote those markets, book tickets for those markets. And so as we went through this, we basically established that there wasn't really anyone that was out there that had something that was ready to go that would really help promote that. And with Destination Express, we felt like supporting them and developing them through an appropriate funding source such as CDBG was well within the parameters of why we established the program and would create sufficient jobs over time and actually has the potential in creating a significant company if successful. So the lender is through the Ogden CDBG, the borrower is Destination Express. The loan amount is $500,000, it's 5%. Because this is a startup company, we found it prudent not to demand repayment for the first 2 years of their operation so that they could get established. Beginning July 1st, 2019, through 25 through the 60th month, they would start making payments of $6,962.96, paying off the loan by May of 2022. The loan purpose is really for the startup development and also making sure that our business and other travelers are aware of what flights are happening in Ogden and what our goals are. So I think I've covered the sources of funds and the uses. The primary is there'll be some of the money will also be supporting their operational startup costs. They will be located in Ogden. And we will continue to hope that their growth will be here in Ogden and that they create an industry that will carry out and support the airport for a long time.
Any questions?
What is the process if this loan defaults?
Well, then we have collateral is against the software and the other assets of the company, which are secured by what's called a UCC-1. We would basically look then to liquidate those assets to somebody else that would, another travel-oriented company or someplace else that we basically try to recover what funds we could in that particular case.
And what is the timeline to get this project?
Well, it's nearly immediate. We're trying to get our first flights in mid-June. It might be a little overly optimistic, but that's our target. So we'll push as fast as we can, hoping Destination Express can get up and going. Obviously, the input on the exact start day will be a great deal of input from them and how they feel things are coming up. We want to rush, but not overly rush. And so we're kind of making sure we do have, depending on how everything comes together and if this is approved, we have a FAM tour, a familiarization tour, where we'll bring in some of these larger travel groups and expose them to Ogden as a destination and make sure they get on board as to what we have to offer. And Sarah was here. She had another obligation to go through. She was going to basically address some of those particular what we would be doing in that FAM tour, and we can kind of, since I don't know all the details, I'd hate to try to guess at them. I've already done that once, kind of skip that portion. So it's she'll be back and discuss that in detail and what we're going to do with that fam tour. But it really is more of exposing people to the various places that they have to do tourism, the ski resorts, obviously, some of the outdoor recreational activities and some of the things that we have. So.
Sydney, do you want to address that? Okay.
Oh, good. There is somebody. Here we go. I'm so happy.
Hello, I'm Sydney Furton with Visit Ogden. So I can elaborate a little bit more on exactly what the fam tour would entail. So our sales team and the marketing team, which includes myself and Shane Oscarthorpe, are working very hard on identifying key meeting planners and journalists to come to our destination. While they're here, they'll be experiencing all that we have to offer, since June is our target date for this fam tour. We're hoping to have it based around some of our music festivals, our events that are taking place on 25th Street, introducing them to our dining, nightlife, and also our resorts, and also targeting our destination as a dark sky designation. During this,
the what?
A dark sky designation, so heading up to Ogden Valley and admiring the night sky, which is very unique for those coming from LA, Orlando, and the Bay Area. We'd also be doing mini site inspections at the conference center, the Egyptian Theater, and yeah. So just definitely getting them familiarized with our area, and hopefully we'll be booking business out of this trip, as well as articles about our area. So, any questions?
So this is primarily or only for the people that are coming from those destinations, not necessarily taking anyone from here?
No, I believe it would go both ways. But our primary focus with Visit Ogden is bringing people in from those destinations here to advertise about our offerings to that destination. And I believe there is some marketing dollars put aside for kind of the same thing to happen from people from our destination going there. So,
who can speak more about that?
I'm not sure who can speak more about the businesses going out.
No. Yeah. Nope. I don't know that we have anyone here that can answer that question.
Yeah. Great. Thanks. Thanks for doing it quickly, too.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Can we get an answer to that at some point? Yeah. No, it doesn't have to be, it can be in writing.
There's actually an extended plan, and we didn't plan on presenting that tonight, but there's an extended plan, and we can do that as an informational item. We just kind of needed to make sure we had everything in place before we finished the plan, because we've been guessing a lot at start dates, which makes the logistics a little challenging.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, any other questions?
Well, I think this has the same magnitude as many years ago we developed the junction, and this airport project has that same impact to Ogden, where we can now become a regional destination and not just a local one. But it's still, that'll have the impact that we experienced with the junction process.
Had a status change going from Ogden Municipal Airport to Ogden International Airport. That would be kind of cool. So you ready for
motion? Yeah, we don't have to do a public hearing.
No. No. Then I would move that we adopt Resolution 2017-8.
Second.
We have a motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Lopez, to adopt proposed Resolution 2017-8. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Stevens?
Aye.
Councilmember Blair?
Aye.
Councilmember Garner?
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez?
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski?
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer?
Aye.
Chair White?
Aye. And that passes. Thank you.
Keep up the hard work, guys.
I know.
Point a thing outside the box. I think that's really remarkable that that you guys came up with this. This is pretty neat. That's pretty exciting.
And as I have commented in other forums, that this is moving through our process very quickly, and I appreciate you guys taking the extra time to read through everything quickly, so thank you. And your time.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't comment on Tom's footwork tonight. That was impressive.
He's also trying to see how many chairs he can sit in.
No, he's bouncing.
Which one is
where in the council chamber is Tom? All right, next on our agenda is new business. And I believe
Sean Choate will be presenting.
Sean, come on up. Do you need Lisa to back you up or anything? Do you need Lisa's help at all?
We're not calling on Tom either.
It's just give Lisa a hard time night, I think.
So I am excited to be here tonight. I really am. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the process. I understand that you have the proposed resolution in front of you, electing the new executive director for the council. So the process that we went through, the position was posted on January 20th. It was a nationwide search. We did search international city and county management association, the National League of Cities and Towns, the Utah League of Cities and Towns, as well as at least 12 additional job boards, and then a number of community agencies, churches, universities, and schools. So the position was posted for 3.5 weeks, and we received 148 applicants. Of those 148 applicants, I, along with Bill Cook, the previous executive director, we narrowed it down to about 15 to 20. And then the selection committee that consisted of some community partners, Blake Wallen with Boyer Business Development, Jenny Scothern, the executive director of the Goal Foundation, Adrian Andrews, the chief diversity officer at Weber State University, Azanette Garza, professor of psychology at Weber State University, Brad Mortensen, the vice president for University Advancement, and Bill Cook, the previous executive director. The selection committee met, and we reviewed those 15, and we narrowed it down to 8, and we interviewed 8 candidates. And it was a difficult decision as to who to forward on to the council members based on the criteria that was set forth, but we had some great candidates. So we presented our top 5 to the council members, and as you know, you interviewed last Tuesday, and I will let you make the announcement for that.
Okay, thank you, Sean, for all your work on getting this to this point, and that was no small task. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Any questions?
No, and thank you. The committee
very
too.
Much.
Thank you.
Okay, well, Chair White, if I might read this resolution. This is a resolution of the Ogden City Council appointing a new City Council Executive Director and providing that this resolution shall become effective immediately upon final passage. Whereas on January 20th, 2017, Bill Cook, who had served as the City Council's Executive Director for more than 15 years, announced his intent to retire effective January 25th, 2017. And whereas the City launched an extensive nationwide search for a new Executive Director, posting the position with the International City, County Management Association, National League of Cities and Towns, Utah Division of Workforce Services, and other recruitment organizations. And whereas the selection process for the executive director position involved interviews with an initial screening committee that consisted of representatives from various local organizations, finalists were selected and interviewed with the City Council. And whereas the executive director of the City Council position was vacated before the selection process could be completed, and the City Council appointed Janine Eller-Smith as interim council executive director. And whereas the following completion of the selection process, the City Council has determined that Janine Eller-Smith is the best candidate to fill this position and desires that she be appointed City Council Executive Director. And whereas Janine Eller-Smith has consented to accept the position and to serve as Executive Director to the City Council, now therefore be it resolved that the Ogden City Council does hereby appoint Janine Eller-Smith as City Council Executive Director effective March 22nd, 2017. The said appointment shall be for an indefinite period with commensurate responsibilities, salaries, and benefits associated with the position. So I would make a motion that we adopt resolution number 2017-10, appointing Janine Eller-Smith as the City Council Executive Director for
Ogden. Second.
I am. A motion by Vice Chair Heyer, second by Councilmember Garner to approve the proposed resolution 2017-10, appointing Janine Eller-Smith as our next executive director. This is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Blair.
Aye.
Councilmember Garner.
Aye.
Councilmember Lopez.
Aye.
Councilmember Nadolski.
Aye.
Councilmember Stevens.
Aye.
Vice Chair Heyer.
Aye.
Chair White.
Aye. And that passes. Congratulations.
We've got a call for speech.
I would love for her to come up and say a few words. Or go down and say a few words.
Oh, yeah, we need a picture of this event, too. Maybe do the, let's do the picture first. Yeah, let's do it.
Thank you.
Chair White, Vice Chair Heyer, council members, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm really humbled and honored to stand before you tonight as your new council executive director. Thank you for your vote of confidence and for trusting me with this great responsibility. I know that I have some big shoes to fill, but I'm hoping that I can rise to the occasion. As I mentioned when we met previously, I've had my eye on this job for 15 years, and it's very rewarding to now have this opportunity to serve you in this capacity. I've worked for Ogden City for more than 20 years, but it wasn't until 2009 that I had the opportunity to come to the council office. And it's been everything that I hoped for. It's truly been a great experience. I've loved the work because I've been able to learn so much. Believe it or not, it's hardly ever boring, the work that we do. There's always just something around the bend that we can learn, or some new issue that comes up that nobody knows anything about, and we can dive in and learn and then help you understand those things. I've loved the people that I've got to know here. Bill Cook especially has put together a great team of professionals who are really excellent at what they do. We've got a really great office staff, and I think that you recognize that and are appreciative. The administrative staff are also very dedicated public servants who find creative solutions to big problems, just like we've seen tonight. And I look forward to working with them in my new capacity. And even though there's a natural tension in our form of government, which sometimes can exhibit itself in conflict, I truly believe that the council and staff and the mayor and his administration all have the best interests of the citizens of Ogden at heart. I know that if we all work together in our respective roles, that we can continue to make great things happen in Ogden. And I look forward to contributing in any way I can to make that happen. And I see my primary role as making you successful in your roles. And so I just want to thank you again for this opportunity, and I look forward to working with you for the next 20 years.
Comments from the council members? No?
Well, first of all, what we're going to have to do is get her a nameplate so it'll not be vacant there. But, you know, Bill Cook took us to a plateau, which I'm grateful for and very thankful. He served the city well, and he introduced programs that we're benefiting from. And usually when someone leaves, they say, it's going to be hard to fill your shoes. Well, Janine, I don't want you to fill his shoes. I want you to fill your own shoes. I want you to develop programs that's going to take us beyond the level where we're at the present time. I support you 100%. And you have those skills to do that. You exercise professionalism in whatever you do. You have the knowledge and understanding of what's happening in the city. As the screening committee went through, I'm very thankful and appreciative of the screening committee, because they gave us five top candidates that could fulfill that assignment, and they had all the qualifications to do so. But when Janine came in, I had a good feeling, a feeling of comfort and peace. Reason that is because she was the right person that we were selecting. She's easy to talk to, but firm. She's understanding, but listens to the issues. I think will set the tone in our council office. Janine, Ogden and city and our city council is a better place, not only because of your service, but what you've contributed through your skills and development for Ogden City. And I appreciate for that opportunity for you. And we'll need to put a new nameplate on her, so.
You're right, if I might say a few things too. I've been on the council for a little over 5 years. Janine has not been verbose. She doesn't say a ton, but I've learned over that period of time that when she does speak, you better listen because it's important. She's very intelligent. She's very insightful. When you came in for the interview, you hit on the right points that are the things that these council members have expressed to each other and to me that are going to help to move the plateau up. They're going to take us to a more focused and effective level. Maybe those are two good words, I think, that apply here. And so I'm very eager to work with you. It's going to be a pleasure. I appreciate the work you've done in the past and look forward to all the good stuff in the future. So thank you.
And Janine, I'm just going to say it's been a pleasure. I've been in leadership. I've had the opportunity to spend a lot of time on the phone with you, asking you questions, getting clarification, seeking guidance, but also seeking your input on how, as a council, we can move forward on issues that were important for us to move forward on. And I always appreciated the time you took to be educated, to look into the issues, and to really provide that feedback that we needed to help us move forward. And I know that you will instill those values into your team and as council members, as you help us, as we come forward with some of the ideas that we think are important for the city too. So thank you.
I'll try to get through this better than last time. I'd like to thank Sean for corralling us and our 8 billion different ideas of how we thought this should go. So I thought you did a very good job, and thank you for your leadership in that. I would like to just thank Janine, for the work that she's done and for applying for this position. And I, like Councilmember Garner, I have learned many, many things from Janine. I don't know if maybe you just got stuck taking my phone calls. I don't know, but I enjoyed being able to call you and learn from you. And I have always been just impressed with how thorough you are, how knowledgeable you are, and how much you research and investigate and really dig deep into the issues. And so I know that you'll do a great job. I'm excited to work with you, and I just want to lend my support that I support you in this job 100%. So thank you.
First, I want to thank everybody who helped us get to this point. We couldn't do what we do without having such skilled staff all around us. I want to just point out that we searched high and low and all around the country for the best candidate possible. And I feel really good having done that level of due diligence and knowing that we have the very best in the nation already here and in-house. And I've said this a couple of times to all of you, and I've said it to you, Janine, before. To add to all the things that all the other council members have said, the number one reason I support you entirely in this position is because I trust you. I trust you in your competency in public administration, and I trust you in your character. You have never let me down in those two ways, and that is the most important thing to me. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Chair White. So I want to congratulate Janine, but first I also want to congratulate our council staff. As we all know, it takes a team to do what you guys do, and so thank you for everything you do. Thank you, Glenn, for all your work. Congratulations, Janine. I wish I could share more details about the way the interviews went and our process to make a decision, but obviously I can't. But what I'd like to say is that kind of along the lines of what Councilmember Nadolski said, that we had this incredibly talented pool of people, and yet it was very, very easy to pick you. So just a thrill to have you. Welcome. Congratulations.
A lot of it has been said, but I'm just going to, I am thrilled that you're here, and I'm also want to point out that she is the first woman director in Ogden City ever. The high heels you gotta feel too. So thank you. With that, I am going to move on, and hopefully, as Doug said, you'll get your nameplate soon. Next on our agenda is public comments. This is an opportunity to address the council regarding any concerns or ideas or any topics. And. I don't think any of these people are. Oh,
well,
Colton's
here.
Come on up, man. You have right. You have outdone yourself tonight. So
I wish I had a candy bar to give you or something.
I got a donut.
There you go.
Yeah. So we have spent some. Vice Chair Heyer had said earlier, you prepared a list for us of four questions. Will you go over those four questions, and then I think we have all filled them out, and we'll give them to you at the end.
Okay. What is one concern that has been important the citizens of Ogden City that the City Council has improved or is now working on to improve?
Will you have an answer to that? We all probably have our own answers, so we'll give you those. After
you'll get this. Seven of them.
Yeah. What's the next question?
What branch of city government or person is responsible for the concern?
You'll see that we'll probably all have different answers to that one, too.
What is being done about it?
After listening tonight, do you hear that we do a lot of budget stuff?
Then how can young people of Ogden help with the concern?
Oh, that's a good question.
Councilmember Nadolski really addressed that well. Why don't you comment that you gave to Justin, how a young person can really help?
I'm not actually sure which one you're referencing, but I'd be happy to share the one that I have.
The local process and how one voice can really change things.
Oh, to Representative Fossen?
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's evident there was an example tonight where a resident had a concern, and the resident brought it to their representatives in local government, and then their local representatives brought it to administration. Administration brought it to state legislature, and then it all came right back down to Ogden to make sure that the benefit came down to the people. The answer I gave was that one thing you can do is you can thank a police officer and a firefighter every time you see them. And consider a career in public safety. Thanks.
Thank you for sticking it out.
I wrote down three. Number one, you need to be a good example in the community. The other one is to look for opportunities how Ogden can improve, and and be active in trying to move that ahead. And the other one is that the youth are the future leaders. One day you'll be sitting maybe in one of these chairs as a city councilman or even mayor, but the youth is what's going to make the difference in our leadership.
Colton, I'm just going to say a couple real fast too, and you're already doing it. Be involved. Come and listen to the issues. You saw some great examples here tonight, even of a local group called Family Promise. And one of the things that they are going to do in the community is serve others. And I know in scouting, that's really important, that you understand the importance of service. So do that. Be involved. Study the issues. Listen to what's going on in your own neighborhood. What are the concerns? What's important? And then be involved and serve others. It's the best thing you can do.
I'm impressed.
I am too.
I'm impressed that you, if you can sit down in those chairs, you're more than qualified to sit up in these chairs. So you did a great job. But they've all said the way to do it is just learn the process, learn how to do it, and then get involved. Figure out what needs to be addressed or what needs to be fixed, and then take a part in that. And it's amazing how many little things that you can do that make a big change for everyone. And it's fun to be part of.
I think he's the first scout to provided a list for us to talk about.
I think he might be the first scout to stay for 2.5 hours awake.
Awake, yeah.
Do you know what you want to do when you're older? You don't know yet? Okay.
All right. Not really.
And Colton, what's the name of your other scout that's here with you?
Jacob.
Okay, because Jacob's just been back there too, being quiet. And your leader is a great example for you guys. You're in uniform. You really are living the, you know, what a scout should be doing. So thank you.
So if I can.
You want to be eagles. You want to go for that eagle badge.
That's good.
Very
great.
I have 10 boys.
You have
2 boys that are going after.
Good job.
So what rank are they?
Jacob, what's your rank?
Oh, close. He's right about there. Can I give you one quick piece of advice?
Yep.
So I would advise you that you try to select what you want to do when you're older as soon as you can, and then you start dreaming about it and dream big. Okay? All right.
Thanks, Colton.
Thanks, Colton.
For your time.
Let's grab his papers and...
Yeah. And Jacob, too. I mean, and. All right. Anyone else want to come up for their 3 minutes?
Colton?
I think everyone else wants to go home.
Everybody wants to go home. All right. I don't blame them. Lisa did.
Oh,
man.
I know.
Well, Lisa is gone. Meeting's over.
All right. I need a motion. Oh, no, comments from the mayor. I'm sorry. Trying to move
it
fast.
Just 2 quick comments. And I sent the staff home. I try and get them home with their family as quick as possible. That isn't one of the two. Number one, on behalf of the mayor and myself and the entire administrative staff, we want to congratulate Janine. We're excited to work with her and her new responsibility. And I've worked with Janine a good portion of her 20 years here at the city, and so we're excited and delighted with her new responsibility, so congratulations. Second thing is the hottest ticket in town right now is the Twilight tickets, and the Twilight tickets are going like gangbusters right now. We've probably sold 3 or 4 times what we had by this time last year. So something to be proud of. I think that we're getting a name for that concert series in the month of June, and I would encourage you to get your tickets so that you can come and enjoy the music. I don't know the name. I don't know any of the groups, and they say that's a good thing. If someone my age doesn't know the groups, then that means they're good. Thanks.
Comments from the council members.
I, for one, I'm glad we have an executive director. This is going to be good to have a leader at the helm again. Well, yeah, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but you know, it's really nice to have you on board, Janine.
For all the time you put into this, Vice Chair Heyer.
Oh, thank you.
All right, any other comments? All right.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Lopez, second by Councilmember Garner to adjourn. And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Just checking. We're out of here.